from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, scientists share research about the blob and its potential effects on seafood. The Arctic proposals are mostly met with open arms at the recent Board of Fisheries meeting. And what does Bristol Bay's salmon fisheries look like in the new McDowell Group study? All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
When the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting wrapped up in Fairbanks the other week, changes were made to many Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Arctic fisheries. More than 35 proposals for the Yukon and Kuskokwim either passed or failed by a tight margin of 4-3. In contrast to the hours of deliberation needed for that long list of proposals, the Arctic region, which includes Port Clarence and Norton Sound, had just 6, all of which passed unanimously and in under 1 hour. The proposal that took the longest to pass was put forth by the Department of Fish and Game. Jim Menard is the Arctic Area Manager and presented it to the board.
Mr. Chair, this proposal would provide the department with flexibility to allow subsistence beach seine gear harvest to harvest abundant salmon species while protecting less abundant specific salmon species by requiring the release of that salmon species for conservation purposes.
In other words, Fish and Game is trying to increase subsistence opportunities by allowing the use of beach seines even in times of conservation. The assumption is that species that need conserving, such as king salmon, could simply be live released if they hit the net. The board's Fritz Johnson, however, had his doubts.
If you could use a 6-inch gill net, for instance, as your beach seine, it would seem that you wouldn't be able to release a salmon with the expectation that it would survive. And should there be something attached to this that defines a beach seine in this area?
There are some restrictions in place for the length of a beach seine, but there aren't any for the mesh size. But as Menard described to the board, the region being discussed has mostly small streams that do require mostly small nets. While that did suppress some doubt, the board's chairman, Tom Kluberton, still wanted the net size to be clearly defined.
The only comfort level I can find with this is that if these are small, clear streams, they probably know what they're chasing with that net. And one could only hope that they're chasing targeted species and avoiding non-target species, but my comfort level would go way up if we had a definition.
In an effort to define the net size, there was a motion to adopt the same definition used for the Yukon River, but after further deliberation, nearly everyone was convinced that requiring subsistence users to fish with a specific net size would add additional and unnecessary costs when most already have an appropriate size net. The amendment failed 6-1, and shortly thereafter the proposal passed unanimously. The board then ran through the Arctic's 5 other proposals, which all passed unanimously. They pertain to the fishery's southern boundary, the use of cast nets, the timing of subsistence fishing periods, commercial beach seining, and gill net sizes. A former head of the United Cook Inlet Drift Association and a Alaska Board of Fisheries nominee has been charged with illegally collecting over $7,400 in permanent fund dividends between 2009 and 2014. Roland Ma, who owns a home in Kasilof on the Kenai Peninsula, was charged this month in Juneau District Court with 17 counts of theft and unsworn falsification on his application for 6 years of permanent fund dividends and for commercial fishing permits. According to the charges, Ma left the state for over 90 days during those years and did not disclose his length of absences on the applications. In that time, Ma got resident sport licenses, permits, and tags in Montana. He pleaded no contest last year to 7 counts of license violations in seeking a Montana resident benefit while still claiming Alaska residency. He was fined $7,245 in that case, and the court banned him from hunting, fishing, and trapping in Montana for 18 months.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. Working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Scientists from all up and down the West Coast were gathered in Seattle last week for a conference on a giant mass of warm ocean water known as the Blob in the northeastern Pacific. The second Pacific Anomalies Workshop was held on the University of Washington campus, where scientists discussed how the blob is affecting marine life and climate and what kind of impact El Niño is having on the warm water anomaly. A new video shows how the mass of warm water in the Northeast Pacific waxes in the summer and wanes in the winter.
Most of what we look at is monthly summaries, and it seemed interesting to do it on a daily timescale just to see really how dynamic those features were and how they developed and moved over time.
Tom Wainwright is a research fisheries biologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Newport Research Station in Oregon. To produce the visualization, he used 2 years of sea surface temperature data gathered by ships, buoys, and satellites to show movement or changes in the strength of the blob. Wainwright says a big surprise is the mass of warm water that appeared in Bristol Bay and the eastern Bering Sea during the summer of 2014.
It seemed the blob spread across the Aleutian Peninsula into Bristol Bay, and since I worked down in Oregon and Washington, I hadn't really looked at that before. So I don't know how it's affecting Bristol Bay fisheries.
Wainwright says he primarily produces short-term salmon forecasts for fishery managers and long-term modeling for endangered species listings. Salmon are a cold water species that can be stressed when summer temperatures are higher than normal.
Any periods of warm temperature seem to, at least for the stocks down here, seem to reduce the productivity of salmon. They get very high growth rates when temperatures are warm, but their survival isn't as good.
According to the data, the blob may already have completed its seasonal dispersion after starting to weaken in November.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Last week, we brought you an overview of a new report from the McDowell Group that is a reminder of what many Alaskans already know. Fishing is a big deal in Alaska. KDLG's Molly Dishner has more specifically about Bristol Bay.
Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute Communications Director Tyson Fick says ASME commissioned the McDowell Group to update a study on the role seafood plays in Alaska and America's economy, based on data from 2013 and 2014.
You know, there's more labor income from seafood than from tourism and mining combined, which is, you know, pretty substantial and certainly very, very important in the places where seafood is primary, like Bristol Bay.
The report says 60,000 workers in Alaska's seafood industry earn $1.6 billion per year. That includes the equivalent of about 4,650 full-time jobs in Bristol Bay.
Well, you know, the Bristol Bay region commercial fisheries generate an annual average of $95 million in labor income for fishermen and another $52 million for processing workers. There's not a whole lot of other primary economy generators in the whole region other than seafood that I can think of. So certainly that's important to everybody that lives there, as well as everybody who shows up there to participate in the fishery during the summer.
Despite the short season in the bay, the report says that the majority of people working in processing facilities here made most of their annual income off of the fishery. On the harvesting side, the report says Bristol Bay accounted for 11% of the value of Alaska's fisheries in 2014, with a value of $221 million for about 222 million pounds of seafood. The drift harvest was valued at $182 million. The set net harvest was worth $39 million. The fishery includes 502 resident-owned fishing vessels and 1,619 resident fishermen. And while pollock might be the largest fishery by volume, and halibut, crab, and sablefish take the lead for fish value per pound, the report still calls salmon king, saying it creates the most jobs, the most labor income, and the most total value. The one thing missing from the report, Fick says, is 2015 data. That could be added in a future update. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The commercial fishing industry is a huge network system of management panels, agencies, biologists, lawmakers, processors, and somewhere in there, individual fishermen. The Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program recognizes that fishing is a complicated business to understand and a challenging one to enter. This week, the program is hosting its sixth annual Young Fishermen Summit in Juneau to introduce newbies to the industry. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
It's not your grandfather's fishing industry. Alaska is a player in the international seafood market. Many people who think about getting into the game have no clue about what's at stake other than just catching fish. Sonny Rice with the Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program says the Young Fishermen Summit is about everything but the water.
Not so much about how to go out and catch fish or repair your boat, but mostly about what is the market for Alaska seafood? Why do you see one price at the dock and get a different price in the store?
Finances are a big part of the summit, managing a small business and evaluating the costs of entering new fisheries. The summit takes place in late January in Juneau at the same time as a meeting of the International Pacific Halibut Commission. The IPHC, the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the Pacific Salmon Commission, and the Alaska Board of Fisheries all spin the threads that determine the size and shape of fishing seasons in the state. Rice says it's important that young fishermen learn the ropes of talking to these government panels. They have a workshop on just this topic.
We do something called a mock board of fish. So we'll have some of our participants actually play people who are giving testimony, and some of our participants will play board members, and they'll practice giving a 3-minute testimony. We have the light system there so they can see what it's like to have it counting down how many seconds left you have to testify. And we'll teach them about, you know, how to best compress your message into that 3 minutes that you're given.
And it's not just the incredibly complicated politics of Alaska fishing. The scientific management strategy is also daunting for newcomers. Rice says the summit incorporates a number of sessions with fishery scientists and includes a trip to the Douglas Island Pink and Chum Hatchery. So how old is too old for the Young Fisherman Summit? Rice says young doesn't necessarily refer to a participant's age.
The bulk of our audience is people who have maybe just bought in. So you're committed to commercial fishing as a career. Some of these things are new to you.
Now in its sixth year, the summit is beginning to include presentations from alums. Some of the participants from the early years who've gotten a toehold in the business and who have gained a lot of practical experience. It's a great chance to network with some of the people who are already making decisions in the industry, she says. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The sixth annual Young Fishermen's Summit started on Wednesday and is wrapping up on Friday.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
That's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KNOM's Emily Russell in Nome, KDLL's Jenny Nyman in Kenai, KTOO's Matt Miller in Juneau, KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham, KCAW's Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and APRN's Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.